It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Another deadly bomb blast in northern Nigeria. The West African Ebola outbreak worsens. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. A massive car bomb explosion in northeast Nigeria Tuesday killed at least 20, perhaps as many as 56 people, including elderly women who sold peanuts and lemon juice in a marketplace in the city of Maiduguri. The blast came from explosives hidden under charcoal in the back of a pickup truck or van. There's been no claim of responsibility, but officials are quick to blame Boko Haram, the Islamist radical group which originated in Maiduguri, and blame for the deaths of thousands over the past 5 years. The number of fatalities from West Africa's Ebola outbreak continues to rise as officials in the region scramble to contain the situation. The World Health Organization says nearly 470 people have now died from Ebola. The WHO confirmed or suspects nearly 760 cases in Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, where President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has declared a public emergency. She warns anyone found hiding a suspected Ebola victim in a home or prayer house will be punished. Dr. Sheku Mar Khan is with the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health.
My biggest problem as it stands now is getting the people to still accept the disease. People should understand that immediately somebody presents with diarrhea and vomiting, they should report to the hospital immediately.
Health ministers from 11 African countries hold a two-day meeting in Ghana today on controlling the Ebola outbreak. The International Medical Aid Agency Doctors Without Borders says at least 58 people have been killed or on hospital grounds in South Sudan since the conflict there broke out in December. VOA's Gabe Josler reports the group, also known as MSF, documented that facilities have been ransacked, patients and healthcare workers killed, and other equipment destroyed or stolen.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, MSF program manager for South Sudan, William Robertson, said the violence represents an inversion of the role of healthcare facilities as places of safety.
Indeed, the violence carried out against the wounded and sick and those seeking shelter are not only violations of international law, but they are an affront to human dignity. The damage has far-reaching consequences beyond the act of the violence itself.
The attacks documented by MSF took place in Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity states, areas at the center of the conflict between government forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and rebel factions aligned with former Vice President Riek Machar. Warring sides in South Sudan have signed 3 ceasefire agreements since January to end the violence and allow for humanitarian access, but the deals were all quickly violated. The United Nations says 1.5 million people have been displaced by violence and reports alarming rates of hunger across the country. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
The United States has imposed sanctions on a Ugandan rebel group a day after the UN Security Council did much the same. The U.S. Treasury Department said Tuesday it's sanctioning the Allied Democratic Forces for, quote, targeting children in situations of armed conflict through rape, killing, abduction, and forced displacement. It says the group, which is based in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, launched attacks in DRC last year, forcing thousands of Congolese to flee into Uganda. Treasury says the group is responsible for acts of beheading, rape, and recruiting children as young as 10 to fight against the Ugandan government. In South Africa, more than 200,000 engineering and metal workers launched a strike over wages, coming just days after the end of a 5-month platinum miners' strike. That walkout was a setback for the South African economy, which contracted in the first quarter. Finance Minister Nhlanhla Nene expects increased spending this year, putting a strain on the South African budget.
The future suddenly looks very different for South Africa in a world with higher interest rates, falling commodity prices, and changing trade patterns.
He says there's a new push within the government to ease labor relations. Morocco Tuesday rejected the African Union special envoy for the disputed Western Sahara territory. Former Mozambican President Joaquin Chissano was named to the post at an AU meeting in Equatorial Guinea last week. Morocco has controlled most of the territory since 1975. The Algerian-backed Polisario Front has long sought independence for the Western Sahara region. Argentina has reached the World Cup football quarterfinals in Brazil with a 1-0 extra-time victory over Switzerland. Late Tuesday, Belgium defeated the United States 2-1. On Friday, France will take on Germany and Colombia faces host Brazil. On Saturday, surprising Costa Rica will play the Netherlands. Argentina will go against Belgium. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa is said to be getting worse.
The main problem now is that there is insufficient staff who is able to implement communication activities to tackle this kind of a problem.
Dr. Guido Borghese is UNICEF's child advisor for child survival and development in Western Central Africa. Gender-based violence against Central African Republic refugees in Eastern Cameroon is on the rise. We'll examine the impact of terrorism on Kenya's East Coast economy. And the United Nations says the rights of children in conflict zones are being violated. Swaziland's banned opposition hopes the cancellation of the country's AGOA eligibility will speed up multi-party democracy, and a bone marrow transplant is successful in treating sickle cell disease. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The World Health Organization says the number of deaths from West Africa's Ebola outbreak continues to rise. This comes as an emergency meeting of West African health ministers is underway today, Wednesday, in Accra to address the growing Ebola outbreak. Dr. Guido Borghese, UNICEF's chief advisor for child survival and development in West and Central Africa, tells Ricky Shryak that the gathering in Accra needs to address national staff shortages in the entire West Africa sub-region if officials there hope to stem the spread of the deadly fever.
What I'm expecting from the Accra meeting is that, first of all, there will be a momentum to have all partners together, national and international, to discuss and to see for the first time this issue, not as a Liberia or Sierra Leone or Guinea, but as a regional issue.
What is the current situation? The numbers in Sierra Leone are jumping every day right now, it appears. So is this worrying that it's still growing?
The number of new cases, is increasing every day. But the situation of much concern, if you wish, is not really alarming, but is a great concern for the region. The main reason is that is now to be considered as a regional epidemic because of permeability of the borders in this region and the movement of a population, and also because there is still a misperception of the disease and with fear from population, rumors, and this affects also the performance of response.
Yes, you mentioned the fears of the disease, and I've heard about certain cases where people flee the hospitals, or if they have Ebola, they go into hiding because they don't want to go to the hospital. Do you hope that at this ministerial meeting coming up in Accra on July 2nd, people will talk about what they can do to stop this? Because I'm guessing this is one of the biggest factors in the continuing spread of the disease.
The main problem now is that there is insufficient staff who is able to implement communication activities to tackle this kind of a problem. Not only communication activities, but also the tracking of the contacts. Because so far the response was provided by international NGOs, but now we are in a situation where we have to scale up the response, and this requires availability of more staff and with adequate competencies. I hope that the solution to the problem that we just mentioned will be identified, and the problem will be analyzed, and a plan on how to mobilize human and financial resources will have this plan at the end of this meeting.
That was Dr. Guido Borghese, UNICEF Chief Advisor for Child Survival and Development in Western Central Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Dakar, Senegal. The United Nations says gender-based violence against Central African Republic refugees in East Cameroon is very high. It has called on the government in Yaoundé to do more to protect vulnerable women. Moki Edwin Kinzeka traveled to Eastern Cameroon and filed this report.
Thousands of people from the Central African Republic, CAR, continue to stream into Cameroon, the country in the region where most have gone to escape violence during the last 6 months. Oh, Most of the 11,000 refugees here in this border village of Gadu are women and girls. But instead of finding safety, many face new threats, including rape. One victim, 17-year-old Duma Divina, says she and her family were assaulted repeatedly. She says she, her mother and her five sisters were abused for 2 weeks by armed men while escaping violence in the CAR. United Nations officials say that even in the refugee camps, these women still face attacks from men both inside and outside the camps. Nurse Defunta Amabel says cattle ranchers also abuse the women.
Since the place is a cattle rearing zone, they meet people who take care of cattle and they sexually assault them. Many of them come in a very devastating situation and some of them come here while pregnant.
Dr. Kepe Jacques of the non-governmental organization Doctors Without Borders told VOA that lots of the victims are suffering from sexually transmissible infections, including AIDS.
We find sometimes even situations as bad as vaginal lacerations, where you actually see that, you know, there are some tears around the vagina, bruises to show that this was really a forceful sex, and maybe not just by one person. Sometimes the women do confess that they were done by multiple persons on the same woman.
The UN representative for women in Cameroon, Rachel Mian Jagone, tells VOA her group is working to educate women on their rights with respect to gender-based violence.
Les actions proposées par Unifam sont des actions qui sont très pertinentes, notamment les.
She says education for women is crucial since so many refugee women are suffering trauma in silence. She says they are setting up units to care for survivors of rape and other violence and are also recruiting social workers to teach women both their rights and how to invest in little businesses so they can have some sort of financial autonomy. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Gado.
The United Nations says thousands of children are being recruited and used as combatants, killed, wounded, and sexually abused in 23 conflict areas across the world by governments, terrorists, and armed groups. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
In a new report Tuesday, UN envoy on children and armed conflict, Leila Zarugi, said her office has documented cases of children recruited and used as soldiers by 8 national armies and 51 armed groups in the past year. She also highlighted grave rights violations against children, including death, maiming, sexual violence, and attacks on schools and hospitals. Some of the most serious situations are reported in Syria, Iraq, Nigeria, and South Sudan. In Syria, where a civil war is raging into its fourth year, the UN estimates that more than 10,000 children have been killed. Zarugi said her office has documented widespread and grave violations against children there.
The conflict and violence in Syria reached unprecedented levels during 2013. No sign of improvement since the beginning of the year, and no political solution in sight.
In her report, Zarugi said armed groups, including several associated with the opposition Free Syrian Army, as well as Islamist groups ISIL and Jabhat al-Nusra, are recruiting and using children for logistics, handling ammunition, manning checkpoints, and as combatants. Armed groups also continue to kill and injure children, rape girls, and target schools. In neighboring Iraq, where ISIL fighters recently have made bold military gains, Zarugi said it is creating extremely violent and dangerous conditions for children. Her report says nearly 8,000 civilians were killed last year, and at least 250 of them were children. Terror groups in Africa also are responsible for attacks on children, most notably in Nigeria. Boko Haram, which has kidnapped scores of schoolgirls in the country's north, has repeatedly targeted schools. According to the UN report, the group also has children as young as 12 in its ranks. In South Sudan, Zarugi said gains in reintegrating child soldiers back into society have been reversed by the political conflict that erupted in mid-December. She recently visited the country.
I saw myself children with guns, with the government, but also with armed groups, with David Yaouyaou, with the SSLA, and with the opposition under Riek Machar.
On a positive note, Chad, which has previously been named for its use of child soldiers, was delisted by the UN this year. The government signed on to an action plan with the UN in 2011 to end the practice. Chad is an important troop contributor to UN peacekeeping operations, and its record as a recruiter of child soldiers threatened to jeopardize its participation in UN missions. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Today's Wednesday, July 2nd, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. The chief executive officer of Kenya's Coast Tourism Association says recent uptake in violence blamed on the Somali-based Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab is having a negative economic impact on the country's coastal region, which largely depends on tourism. Millicent Odhiambo tells reporter Peter Clotty that her organization has petitioned the Kenyan government to work with various Western embassies in the country to reassure tourists that it is safe to travel to Kenya's coast.
The ongoing issues that are happening in the coast have resulted to layoffs, and because of lack of guests coming into the region, our bed occupancy now, though it is the low season still, but even during the low seasons, we still are able to have conferences and other activities, which keeps us about 40% to 50% occupancy. Currently, as we speak, we are ranging between 20% and 30% occupancy because people are just not visiting the region, and it's not just international, but even the local tourists are not coming.
What plans do you have to resolve this, especially when the government keeps on saying that they have implemented security measures to improve security as well as restore confidence in the tourism sector?
There's what wholly the government's responsibility to give, and that is security. And there's what we can do as a sector by ensuring that our premises and our institutions are secure, which we have done on our part. We have installed CCTVs. We have ensured that people who come in and out of our establishment are scanned, and there is utmost security. Actually, the cost for security within our establishment has doubled because we've had to add more askaris for that sake. But there's what the government now needs to do, which is the security of the nation as a nation, which we can only continue lobbying government to ensure that our intelligence is up to date and is able to detect some of these things before they really happen.
There were concerns that were expressed by some hoteliers along the coast that said that the recent U.S. travel warning has also had a negative impact on the tourism sector and the hotel industry along the coast. What can you tell me about this?
No, that is true. It has had a negative impact on the tourism sector, not just the tourism sector, but also the counties as a whole, because the economy of the coast counties are sustained by tourism, meaning therefore that when tourism is low, even the running of the counties is challenged. Within the tourism sector, we have direct effects. We feel the effects directly because then it is what is our day-to-day business. And this has led to a lot of layoffs by the hotels. We actually have some hotels which have even closed down. The travel advisories of the major tour operators not bringing in guests until October has even served to give us a very unfortunate future. We are not quite sure whether we will pick up again.
Millicent Odhiambo is Chief Executive Officer of Kenya's Coast Tourism Association. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Mombasa. An official Swaziland band, People's United Democratic Movement, also known as PUDEMO opposition, says he hopes the cancellation of the country's AGOA eligibility will speed up multi-party democracy in the country. AGOA is a U.S. trade preference that provides duty-free treatment to U.S. imports of about 6,000 products from eligible African countries. To be AGOA eligible, a country must have or be working toward a market-based economy, rule of law, elimination of trade barriers, and protection of workers' rights. But some say AGOA was never meant to be favorable to Swaziland, Sudan as a monarchy with a non-party system of governance. Umpalana Shongwe, a member of PUDEMO, tells me that while the AGOA eligibility annulment might benefit labor unions in Swaziland, it might also help the pro-democracy movement in its fight for multi-party democracy.
This did not surprise us as the opposition. In fact, we were expecting the Americans to take such a step because they have been telling our government to put things in order for a long time, and they kept on promising, but nothing came out. But as an opposition, we are also alive to the fact that should we lose the AGOA, the poverty level in the country will, of course, increase by the closure of textile industries because it employs a lot of people.
What does Swaziland do? Is it because of its labor policy that it does not have a good record about protecting its workers?
The Americans put probably 5 benchmarks that the government should reach. And amongst those benchmarks, there are, of course, political ones, which for democrats. For instance, the removing of the Terrorism Act. So those are some of the things that the government kept on holding on, yet it was not benefiting them.
Swaziland is not the only country. Those countries that were also deemed to be ineligible were given until May, this past May, to correct their AGOA eligibility policies. Why didn't Swaziland act?
Our leaders, authorities, they seem not to have understood what AGOA means. And that is why they were not serious about reaching the benchmarks. They did not believe the Americans would do this because for a long time they've been getting away with murder. You see, but this time the Americans acted differently.
So you mentioned that one of the AGOA eligibility requirements was this, particularly for Swaziland, was this Terrorism Act?
Yes, I'm one of them. As I am standing here, I'm out on bail over this issue of terrorists and all those things. As we speak, the president of PUDEMO and the secretary of the Youth League are languishing in jail because of such laws. So to us, really, while this might benefit the labor unions, it will also benefit the pro-democracy movement.
Umpalana Shangwe is the founding member of Swaziland's banned opposition PUDEMO party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. A risky bone marrow transplant is often successful in treating children with sickle cell disease, a genetic disorder primarily seen in people of African descent. Experts say by the time patients reach adulthood, they are usually too sick to withstand the rigorous procedure. But researchers report they were able to reverse sickle cell disease in adults using a less intensive bone marrow transplant. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Sickle-shaped red blood cells get trapped in blood vessels. They can clog joints, causing severe bone pain, along with difficulty breathing and pneumonia if the misshapen cells get caught in the lungs. The cells can also block blood flow in the brain, leading to stroke. Juliana Ejedobe describes the pain experienced by many sickle cell patients.
Imagine someone taking like a stick and just like stabbing, like, you know, like hitting you on your joints. That's how painful it is.
A standard bone marrow transplant involves using chemotherapy or radiation to destroy all of the spongy tissue that produces red blood cells inside the patient's bone and replacing it with compatible, healthy donor stem cells. The dramatic procedure has successfully treated children with sickle cell disease. But experts say after years of organ damage, many adult sickle cell patients are not good candidates for the full transplant. But researchers have performed a partial bone marrow transplant on 30 adult patients with severe disease, including Ejedobe. All of them had to have a sibling with matching immune characteristics as a marrow donor. The procedure, which destroyed only 30 to 50% of their marrow, effectively cured 26 of the patients, says John Tisdale, an investigator with the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases in Bethesda, Maryland.
Using this less toxic way of preparing a patient for a bone marrow transplant had success rates that are comparable to the more toxic kind of transplant that's performed in children.
After 1 year, doctors were able to take half of the adult patients off medication that suppressed their immune systems as their bodies began producing healthy red blood cells. Juliana Ejidobe, who received bone marrow from her older sister, says she feels a lot better now.
Yeah, I do get pain, but it's not compared to what I used to have before.
The partial bone marrow transplant for adult sickle cell patients was described in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Argentina edged Switzerland 1-0 in extra time through a goal scored by their captain Lionel Messi in Sao Paulo on Tuesday. Elsewhere, Belgium pipped the United States of America 2-1 in extra time in the last round of 16 matches played in Salvador. Meanwhile, the Cameroon Football Federation is investigating allegations of match-fixing by the Indomitable Lions following their 4-0 loss to Croatia on the 18th of June. My colleague James Batty asked Nkemeyang Paul Fuanyi, publisher of the Star Media House in Limbe, Cameroon, to shed some light on the situation.
So far, the story of match-fixing is just rumor peddling in Cameroon now. But we know that the poor showing of the Lions in Brazil 2014 has provoked an investigation by the President of the Republic, who has set up a committee headed by the Prime Minister, head of government, Philemon Yang, to investigate what happened that Cameroon performed very poorly and then give him back the report in a month. So far, there have been allegations of match fixing by some seven players. To me, this is still rumor. Nobody has come out with the facts. As investigation is ongoing, the police have started calling players for investigation, as well as FECAFOOT officials and some top members of the Ministry of Youth and Sport. The problem started a day before the Lions departed to Brazil because the head of state asked the prime minister to hand the flag, the national flag, to the captain of the Indomitable Lions, Etofis. After a test match, Etofis led all the players away. They refused to collect the flag from the prime minister. And the flag was handed to the coach, Volker Finke, who is a German. So handing a national flag to a coach and not to a Cameroonian was the beginning of our Waterloo. Then second, the players refused to board the plane because of bonuses. They were supposed to have left Cameroon at 9 a.m. in the morning. The final left at 4 and got to Brazil late. And when they got to Brazil, we gathered that FIFA slammed them with a 120 million francs fine for coming late.
That was Nkemeyang Paul Fuanyi, publisher of the Star Media House, speaking in Limbe, Cameroon. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The number of deaths from West Africa's Ebola outbreak continues to rise as officials in the region scramble to contain the situation. The World Health Organization says 467 people have now died from Ebola. The WHO has confirmed or suspects 759 cases in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. That's it for this Wednesday, July 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Jackson Vungan Yi, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Jermaine Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa. But please stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vungan in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.